This is Dave Bayless for Human Scale Business. I'm speaking with Patrick Pittman, the e-business coach. Patrick is explaining how owned website traffic is different than, and more important than, bought or earned traffic.
Patrick, what do you mean by owned traffic, and how does it differ from other sources of traffic to your website?
Well, the other sources of traffic can be the traffic that you earn or the traffic that you buy. So owned traffic suggests there's an established relationship there. And by owned, it sort of implies you're in charge of that relationship. Even if it's a new one, you have the capacity to reach out and communicate and nurture that relationship.
So when you think about different sources of traffic, where do you view the cultivation of owned traffic in terms of the priority of your digital marketing efforts?
I place it at the top. I place it above the other methods or sources for traffic because it's really how you start building an asset. It's what gets you off of the treadmill of paid traffic or the roller coaster of earned traffic. And so it's really the foundation of building like an ascending ladder of offers and purchases. It's the way that you can help your customer to the fullest. You know, if you really believe in what it is, the products that you're selling, and they're continuing to buy from you being something that is beneficial to them.
Since the idea of owned traffic presupposes, as you said, an existing relationship, don't new companies have to focus on other sources of web traffic first?
I think this is something that has a lot to do with your measuring your success by your sales if you're just getting started and having a real keen focus on first month, second month, 6 months, you know, the first year, and that's sort of the biggest number in your mind. And if you were instead to look at the measure of success perhaps being the number of people on your list, of course, a fraction will be customers having made the purchase, and a much larger fraction would be those who have not yet purchased. If the focus becomes more about that kind of building a customer list or a prospect list and seeing that as an asset that has the potential for long, long-term returns above and beyond just the monthly sales number, then I think you can become more comfortable making that a priority even at the outset, before you have a substantial customer list. It's perfectly understandable that can seem like something you want to defer because you focus instead on traffic that you can buy. But it does then put you in a situation of looking back over the first year or what have you and just seeing all the charges to your credit cards from Google AdWords and feeling a little bit like you're on a treadmill. That's an experience that I've been in recently where we're looking back over the first 15 months of a new e-commerce brand and feeling like, well, that was our focus, you know, at least in the owners of this company, they were very keen on a first year, 12-month sales. And as I look back on it, they did not give as much attention to the cultivation of the list and building that asset, and instead focused on the sales first 12 months and feel very much like they're on a treadmill with buying traffic that they need to get off of before they exhaust themselves. So I think it's something that it takes some sensitivity and just some confidence that the asset is there and it'll build itself over the long term.
So what I hear you saying, I might phrase in a language of stocks and flows, is that revenue, for example, is dollars per month. It's a flow. And it's important for us to generate revenues as businesses, obviously. And there's a tendency to really place maybe a heightened emphasis on the flow, maybe at the expense of the accumulation of the stock. And what I'm interpreting your comments is saying that it's tempting for a young company to really, really place an emphasis on that revenue flow. And consequently, that drives a behavior that really equally emphasizes the notion of bought traffic. But your suggestion is think hard about that, because really what makes you successful in the long term is developing that accumulation of meaningful relationships with customers and with email list subscribers. And that over the long term can have a bigger impact on your success than maybe a too narrow, too short-term focus on the flow. Am I hearing you right?
Yeah, and I want to go back to the analogy I made about the other sources of traffic, because earned traffic, if we think of that as what might be sent you out of the good graces of search engines through the organic and natural referral process, that can really feel like a roller coaster with all the frightening moments that come with roller coasters as things dip. And then the treadmill of traffic that you can buy doesn't also feel so good after a while. I think you can end up being distracted by trying to optimize for either the traffic you buy or you earn to the point of feeling like you're busy and productive and laboring away at it, and yet to sort of step back a little more distance and say, well, where's the asset we're really building here? How do we accumulate the list and give that a priority is something that I just would emphasize having been there.
If we take the view that cultivating own traffic is a good idea, what are the main tools and techniques for cultivating that kind of own traffic?
The simplest way of saying it is giving attention to how a visitor to your site would be motivated, encouraged, and choose to give you their email address. So it's an opt-in collection process that is the heart of that. And there can be opportunities to follow up through postal methods, but really the email address is, I think, the heart of things. And as much as people talk about social media and finding followers on Facebook, that's a game that's you're very much not in charge of that relationship through which Facebook brokers your fans. That's their relationship. And you can pay them to have some communications there these days. So it's an email collection process, first and foremost.
Given the notion of an email opt-in strategy, are there any tools and techniques that you found that work well?
Well, from a tool standpoint, I could give you a representative one, and that's a tool called Opt-in Monster. If you were to explore the blog on that website and explore the features of that product, you would get a good idea of the kinds of strategies and methods. But there's all kinds of other tools, and that's just representative of kind of the category.
When you think about relationships with customers, it's pretty clear that not all customers are created equal. How do you go about segmenting and prioritizing your communications with your customers and your email subscribers?
I'd like to maybe answer this by just giving an example from a project in the last year that I think is probably a good representation of the kind of things you can do. And this is a brand that had a e-commerce business growing over the last 13, 14, 15 years, but at about 10 years ago, made a real investment in establishing a customer database that had all the sort of robustness you'd want in a growing business. And yet, over that last 10-year period, they had the good fortune of mostly just trying to keep up with demand and send products out the door as fast as they could make them. And yet, were able to then, in the last year, sort of get a little bit ahead and go back through their customer database and really segment it. So I'd like to describe how we segmented that list. And for one, we broke it out by year. What was the first year in which that customer made a purchase? So over the last 10 years, we've got a set of customers that fall into that grouping. We also drew up some rules that said if they bought products A, B, and C, and F and G, then they were in this kind of a segment. And over the last 15 years, they've served in the end four or five sort of definable segments, and we broke that out. And then we broke it out in terms of how many customers had made a purchase over $300. And so that's going to be a number that's going to be relative to your own business. But in this example, an average purchase price was, say, $250, average order size. And so if their accumulated lifetime purchase was over 300, that meant they had purchased more than once. And if under 300, pretty much a one-time purchase. And that's really a useful distinction in how we communicate that with them afterwards. But we went further and found those who purchased over 1,000, those who'd made over, say, 2,500 in lifetime purchases. And that's a whole different category. Those are the kind of people who buy from their Christmas list, you know, and send out four or five orders to their friends. That's a different kind of customer and needs to be communicated with differently. And then lastly, how many months has it been since they've made their last purchase? And we can group that and then have a better understanding how we're going to reactivate those who've been gone too long and those who are just recently made a purchase. So those are, I think, examples of ways of grouping things. And then all kinds of communication strategies come around those different segments.
In the case of your scenario, there was a rich and long database of customer behaviors and yields lots of data with which to geek out as a marketing person. But I'm also inferring that even for younger companies or companies that don't have 15 years of accumulated experience, you can still make some useful distinctions by looking at the frequency of purchase and the amount that people purchase, maybe in, you know, per order, but also over the lifetime of their relationship. And all those, even at a fairly early stage, can help us think about the different sorts of messages that we might want to send to those segments.
Yeah, I mean, that project that was a focus last year is different than a project focused this year, which is a brand that's just under, you know, about a year old. And prior to that, they'd experimented selling on marketplaces with Amazon, eBay, and so on. And so they had a couple years of information and went through a very similar process. It's not as rich in its segmentation, but the method is the same.
So beyond the high-level measures of the number of people that are on your email opt-in list and your customer count and your sales counts, how can you tell whether you're making progress in the realm of cultivating own traffic?
One is that your ratio of website visitors to those who give you an email address exceeds 10%. And if not, work on that. I think another tell is when the number of new subscribers each month is 5 times the number who have unsubscribed. Let me give another tell before we go on. You've got Google Analytics, the ability to measure where the sources of orders come from. You can set up a measure of what's called the medium, be it an email, or another medium would be paid traffic. And then you look at your sources of revenue, and if the source from the email medium is at least half of the sources you're getting from organic or paid search, you're on the right track.
You know, I think there's an argument to be made that the very idea of owned traffic can come off as a bit presumptuous. I mean, it sort of implies this concept of mining a customer resource, where really what's clear today is that we don't own the customer relationship. They're in charge of the relationship. It strikes some that this emphasis on owning and mining at least opens up the risk of alienating your customers if you're being pushy with messaging. I mean, after all, they can simply unsubscribe.
The project that I described, where we went through a history, a pretty rich history of the last 10 years of customer purchases, is one where the founder has extraordinary sensitivity to not wanting to be pushy and not wanting to prompt someone to unsubscribe or in any way feel like it's an inappropriate communication. And that attitude has been a big part of why over the last 10, 15 years, there's been very little follow-up with that customer database. And yet all the while, there is sort of, psychologically at least, if not financially, there's sort of like a banking on the asset that is being accumulated. The confidence that comes from seeing tens of thousands of, you know, hundreds of thousands of names accumulating and building up what I would argue would be a defensible and valuable asset to the business. And yet, I think you have to recognize that is a depreciating asset. It's something that in the end is losing value if it's unused or untapped. To your, I guess, question about what about those who might unsubscribe, after looking back through all of my experiences, I'm more inclined to agree with a fellow named Russell Brunson, who wrote a book called Dot-Com Secrets. His answer, maybe mine today also, would be, if they unsubscribe, so what? I think at this point, there is just a false sense of either security or value or false sense of like rightness by just keeping people on your list that without communicating with your customers in some sort of frequent and relevant and appropriate way, you're not doing yourself any favors by letting them remain on your list without the communication. And if you really believe in what products you're delivering to them, they're not getting any benefit from it either by not continuing to be a part of, you know, your latest and greatest products and continuing to purchase.
Yeah, my sense is that, you know, any kind of relationship is based on some sort of long-term reciprocity. You've got to give to get. So the way I interpret some of your comments is that if you have a customer relationship, to maintain that, to keep it, to add value to your customer, you need to provide them with useful information about your products, about what your products stand for, how the kinds of things that you do can fit into their lives and be useful. So I certainly appreciate that just not communicating with customers is a missed opportunity, not only for you, but it doesn't serve your past customers well. You know, furthermore, I appreciate that the value customers are going to place on a relationship is going to wax and wane over time. So the element of unsubscribing can just be a representation of that. And that's okay. You no longer fit. There's no longer the interest. So it doesn't serve you or the customer well to keep sending them messages that are unwanted and unneeded. I think there is a point in some situations where these relationships can be cultivated to the mutual benefit, but they're also subject to exploitation. So I'm not sure that all unsubscribes are created equal.
Yeah, I think the word cultivation is important if that's, you know, a word that you just used. A sign of cultivation of your list is the kind of segmentation that I described in the earlier example. So to the extent that you understand who you're communicating with and what their behaviors have been and what their expressed interests and actions have been, the value you can bring back and how you communicate with them and what you can suggest them do next is much more, you know, significant. It's appropriate. It's relevant. It's timely. It's not abusive. It's not just objectifying them as, oh, let's maximize the lifetime value and keep pushing until they burn out and unsubscribe. So that cultivation is a great attitude to bring to it. And then one of the signs of doing that is segmenting your list in the kind of ways we talked about.